Ikey shootings any old day. 8223 0000 is my open line number. Craig Isherwood from the Citizens Electoral Council, friend of the show. Hello, mate.
Yeah, how you going, Jeff?
You all right?
Yeah, we're having fun over here.
Yes, well, yeah. Now, we don't know who the government is yet, Craig.
Oh, it's a bit of a worry, isn't it? Well, there's been some wags around the place saying, oh, we don't have a government. Things are going pretty good. Maybe we don't need one. Maybe we can hock it off.
Great.
Maybe we can sell it.
There's a great... Put it on eBay.
Yeah, highest bidder.
How about that?
Yeah, who knows?
Gee, I reckon there'd be some crazy dysfunctional, tin pot countries around the world that could do with a decent government. Well,
you would just hock it off, eh?
Some sort of government.
Yeah.
Actually, I read an article by Alexander Downer the other day, and he made a very good point. You know how the opposition, every other day, they're calling for the resignation of some minister for some reason. They're always saying, oh, you know, we call on so-and-so to resign, and ordinarily the government has the power to go, don't be stupid, and it doesn't go anywhere. It's just grandstanding and just a way to get a news grab in the news that night. Whereas now, whoever the government ends up being, it'll be knife-edge stuff. And when the opposition, whoever the opposition is, says, we call on Minister whoever to resign, now all it'll take is one of the independents to go, yeah, I agree with that. Bang. Oh, there's a minister gone. They could do it the next day. We call on another minister to resign for some reason. All it takes is one of those independents to go, yeah, I agree with that too. Bang. There's another one gone. This will be just kind of like how the 2007 election turned out to be. The one you don't want to win. It'll be a dysfunctional government.
Well, that's what it's shaping up to be.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at the conservative side of politics, Tony Abbott sort of lining up his wannabe government. But once you get to July next year, he's got to deal with a Senate which is full of Greens. So how are they going to make that function?
Mm.
Then if you get the Labor Party government in, I mean, they've lost so much confidence of the people from the number of seats that they've lost, and also Anna Bligh up in Queensland is still making things worse by selling off everything and privatisation, which is one of the key causes of the hatred up there in Queensland. I mean, they don't want to see their rail systems and ports sold, and that's, 9% swing in Queensland was what really knocked the hell out, and everywhere that Rudd went, the swing was about the same size too, so he didn't help at all.
Wow, there you go. So, yes, it'll be interesting to see.
The point is, you're right, there's going to be a dysfunctional government, and that's why we started the campaign the minute the election finished, because, our vote across the country actually doubled, went up 100%. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean huge numbers of votes, but our votes are very solid votes, they're very hard votes. People know what they're supporting when they vote for us.
So that's interesting. The second the polls close, you started campaigning, are you expecting another election sometime soon to sort this out?
I don't think it's going to work. I mean, I can't see any government going, oh, we're going to go for a full three-year term. They don't know what's coming down with the global financial system. I mean, there's two interesting programs recently. One was called Overdose on the ABC network, which people can get on their computers, which was actually going through the depth of the global financial crisis that they're forecasting for 2010.
Right.
And that none of the mechanisms are going to work, like trying to increase the pumping money into the economy or dropping interest rates, because interest rates have already been dropped in places like Japan and the United States.
Mm.
And they're already pumping money into the system as it is. So the whole system's on a knife edge, and there's not much they can do about that. That was the first thing, and you get little snippets coming through, like other public statements, like 40% of first homeowners are suffering from mortgage stress, and therefore it's better to rent than buy now. Now, that's the sort of public discussion that's taking place. You start to think, well, what else is going to go on? If you've got a dysfunctional government, how are they going to deal with that? I mean, how are they going to come up? We had enough debate backwards and forwards about the question of the stimulus package. What's going to happen when you've got a government, if it's in the case of the Labor Party, doesn't really have a mandate from the people, or in the case of the Conservatives, is watching their back because of the Greens all the time. It's going to be unstable. And
if nothing else, it'll be entertaining, Craig.
Well, if the country survives, yes.
Yes, because for a long time people have thought, politicians say, they lose touch with reality after a while. They get a little bit arrogant. I guarantee you, whoever takes power, they won't be that arrogant. They'll know that they're only there just over the line.
I think what you're seeing with the discussion with the independents is very interesting. You're getting sort of ideas come up where, you know, these guys have been frowned upon for years upon years. I mean, Bobcat has been, for example, in the Parliament for, as an independent, I think for 13 years, but before that he was in the Parliament for 10 years or something. He's a long time member. And
yep.
These guys just get ignored. And now all of a sudden they've got all this power to decide the next government. You know, the sorts of things that they're proposing may have real merit. So it's interesting.
In the case of Bob Catter, someone was saying that he's looking to retire pretty soon. So he's really got nothing to lose. He can play hardball for, and particularly looking after his own backyard and the people who voted for him. And doesn't really have to worry about looking to the future. He's just after the best deal for his patch of the country.
Bob Catter supports some of the water projects that we do, like, for example, the Bradfield scheme. He actually has the Bradfield scheme up on his website. And he's been pushing for the Bradfield scheme, which is a large water diversion process project from the northern rivers like the Burdekin and the Tully rivers up in the north of Queensland in through the centre of Queensland. Now, the original Bradfield scheme had that water coming all the way down to Lake Eyre, but because of evaporation rates, that would only happen, you know, on a few occasions. But what his idea was to irrigate nearly the entirety of the centre of Queensland. Now, Bob Catter is a fan of that because back in 1984, they had a feasibility study for this, which was shelved and actually locked up. No one's ever seen it. But they were going to produce two new abattoirs because they're going to increase the cattle grazing areas. They were looking at new sugar refineries. They were looking at enormous increase in the industry inside the central part of Queensland. But, of course, it's never been built. Now, Bob Catter believes in development. Some of his ideas that we don't support, like the idea of growing sugarcane for biofuels and, you know, that sort of thing, that's completely unproductive. But nonetheless, he's got some very interesting ideas. And he might look a bit of a wag on the TV with his big hat, but I think that's all the cover. He's a very smart guy.
Now, another catchy press release headline from yourself. Those deadly green Nazi solar panels, unquote, Craig.
Well, that's...
What's that about?
Well, the fact is that in a number of countries, the United States and Germany, and here in Australia, I believe, if you have a fire in your house and you've got a solar panel on it, the fire brigade won't put the fire out. They'll just let it burn, burn itself out because these panels, these solar panels, particularly well during the day, not during the night, generate, you know, very large voltages of direct current. And if they try to open up the roof by hacking through one of these things, they risk electrocution.
Mm.
And this is something that happened. It's actually something that was reported because of a blaze that took place in June 2009 in Germany at a warehouse complex of BP Solar, of all places.
Oh, right. Okay, yes.
Now, this BP's 200-square-metre array in Mannheim was one of the largest roof-mounted installations in the world, and it was fabricated by BP Solar.
Right.
But they wouldn't fight it because it was too dangerous to fight.
That's interesting. I'd heard that there's two ways you can have your house hooked up. One, as an island, essentially, off the grid and totally generated by solar power. Or if you are on the grid and in that, you know, the feed-in scheme, whatever you don't use gets fed into the scheme. I'd wondered whether, if the power went out, why can't you just, you know, why can't you actually still be on electricity? Because the power's out, you know, the grid. So you've got the solar panels and what have you. Why can't you just be enjoying that? Part of the reason is, they say, if the power's out for whatever... See, part of the reason the power might be out, there might have been a storm, and a tree might have come down across lines, and if they've got all these houses in the neighbourhood still pumping electricity into the grid, they can shut down the grid, but they can't shut down all the houses. So they've made it so if the grid goes down, then your house goes down as well. That kind of supports that. The ETSA people and what have you, they're worried about all this electricity running to the grid just for the safety of their own people.
Well, the other thing that's going to hit people in the head, and there's been a report in this last week's Australian, and we'll see how sexy, you might say, solar power is going to be in a couple of years' time, because the chief executive of one of the country's largest energy retailers, Origin Energy, came out and said, look, the power prices are going to double in the next 5 to 7 years, full stop. They're going to double because of the government's political mandate that we have to have 20% renewable energy. And the fact is that solar power is one of the most inefficient forms of power that you have. First of all, because it only actually, you only gain it when the sun shines. It's about 35 cents per kilowatt hour. The cost of wind power is something like $100 to $125 per kilowatt hour. But those people like me that don't have solar but pay electricity bills are going to be paying subsidies on that expensive power.
Mm.
It costs more money to build the panels and to install the panel than you'll ever get out of these panels over their lifetime.
Because they need to be replaced after about 15 to 20 years. So just when it looks like they'll be breaking even, you have to buy the next lot.
Yeah, and that's the problem. We are subsidized. And it's crazy because, you know, I've talked about nuclear power on your program before. You can generate nuclear power incredibly cheaply. You're looking at something like 1.3 cents per kilowatt if you build a plant and amortize it over 5 years.
Mm.
There's been financial tricks done in the past where they're amortized over 10 years, which makes them more expensive and blah. So the point is that the use of nuclear power is absolutely crucial. I really can't see the sanity of here we are in the 21st century. We've got this giant ball in the sky, which is using fusion energy, which is energy created by fusion processes, which we can replicate here on Earth, but we haven't done the research to get up to commercial-grade fusion energy production yet, but it's coming, and it should come faster if we had a massive development push on this.
I've got to tell you a story about the solar thing, because I think solar gives everyone warm fuzzies in terms of it's free, why not tap into it? And I've been on that bandwagon for a while as well. We had a weekend away last weekend, and there was this little retreat we stayed at out in the country. And that was a standalone house. It wasn't on the electricity grid. It was powered totally by solar and a little battery pack. And they had six panels, which is what we've got at home. And I've always wondered how much you could run your house off just six panels. And here's how much you can run your house off six panels. If you've got the fridge on, there's a big sign that says, don't use the toaster at night. Now, why is that? Anyway, so I thought, okay, well, fair enough. But during the day, there's a little meter on the wall that tells you the state of the battery pack, the energy level. And if you, with just the fridge on and nothing else on, no other lights, if you put some toast in and press it down, you watch the power out of the batteries go brrrr all the way down, and then as soon as it popped, you just get over the line. It'll pop and then back up again. So that's all it takes to drain all the electricity off those. And on a sunny day, one fridge and a toaster. And the toaster is enough to wipe it out. It's not bad, is it?
I mean, how can you run an economy on that?
That's pretty
good. What you've elaborated is why you can't use solar power or wind power for that matter, because the wind doesn't blow, you have no energy. And it's happened quite a bit on the East Coast, you know, for months at a time. The point is you have to rely on baseload power, and at the moment it's coal and it's fossil fuels. There's a nuclear scientist that we knew, Professor Leslie Kemeny. I mean, he's still alive. He's he's a foundation member of the International Nuclear Energy Academy, and he makes a really interesting comment, which sort of rocked me and was maybe set up on the chair. He says, you know, ordinary fire, like the normal fire that we get burning stuff, is an extraordinarily and exceedingly rare and abnormal phenomenon. He says, because it can only occur on a planet with long evolutionary history of living things creating an atmosphere containing free oxygen. In our solar system, it is only possible on Earth. He said, nuclear energy is universal, common, and natural kind of energy in the creation as a whole. Indeed, all other forms of energy are derived from it. All wood, all coal, all oil and gas humans have ever burnt came from our natural nuclear power station or power plant, the sun. Through photosynthesis, so too with water power and wind power.
It's true.
So, see, when we burn stuff, there's nowhere else in the universe you will find that process.
It's unnatural. Hey, I've got Wally here who wants to say hello. Hello, yeah. Wal.
Hello, Jack. Could you tell me again what you said about the firefighters will not offend a building with the solar panels on there?
That's what they're saying in terms of the policy. There's this is specifically coming from a report in 2009 in the U.S. from New Jersey. In the U.S., yeah.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah. But I can assure you that in Australia, the modern nozzles or branches, as we call them in the fire service, they're normally operated at 100 pounds per square inch or 700 kilopascals, and if operated at that pressure or above, electricity will not come back. Now, that's up to 33,000 volts.
Wow. Well,
their argument is that in order to fight a fire, they need to, in most cases, open up the roof cavity in order to be able to get into it.
Yes.
Now, where you have large arrays of solar panels that completely cover the roof,
yes,
the only way of doing that is putting an axe through the panel to get access to it.
Oh, no. You wouldn't do that. You'd have to be stupid to do that.
That's what their argument is, and therefore they just have to learn to burn. If they can't get access to the roof space, they have to let the fire burn. And that's reported from the fire chiefs in New Jersey.
Well, you're talking about America now.
Now, also Germany.
And anything can happen in America. But
well,
what we're saying,
Germany.
What I am saying is that I don't believe anyone in Australia's got their whole entire roof covered with solar panels.
Oh, I've seen actually a couple of houses.
You've seen a couple?
Yeah.
Well, you're probably more intelligent than I am, but I'm telling you that a hose with a pressure of more than 100 pounds per square inch or 700 kilopascals will not conduct electricity back through it.
Mm.
And any fool that would put their axe through it, they don't put their axe through things just willy-nilly.
That's natural selection, Wal. People who do that. It takes them out.
Some people will, apparently, yeah.
They only do it once.
Yeah.
Thank you, Wal. Now, Craig, we'll have to leave it there. If people want to find out more.
Website, particularly with you'll find some very interesting things on the front of the website, www.cecaost.com.au. And our Dick Smith competition has been bumped up to $1,000.
Oh, this is the bumper sticker contest.
Yes, because Dick Smith himself has volunteered $500.
Right.
So work that one out.
Now, just to recap, you're after a catchy phrase.
Well, Dick Smith is putting forward a competition. He's putting forward $1 million, he says, to have some bright under 30-year-old come up with the best solutions for reducing the world, Australia's population problems. Mm-hmm. And we are putting out a competition that comes up with the best, wittiest or cleverest bumper sticker that opposes, ridicules or condemns Dick Smith's macabre mission to depopulate Australia.
Mm.
So it's all on our front of our website. There's cartoons there. There's plenty of interesting stuff. He has contributed $500 towards his own ridicule. Now, work that one out. I think he's desperate for the publicity.
Funny.
The old adage, you know, any publicity is good publicity, I think is what he's working
on. All right. Craig, I'll catch you next week.
Righto. Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you, mate. The open line is 822-3000.